ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Well. If you saw the other day the Corey Richens case.
There you go.
There we go. Right graphic. You saw quite a show. You saw the sentencing of Corey Richens. If you watched that, if not, and you're looking for a good 4 hours of your life you'll never get back, go ahead and watch it. But it is very telling, especially if you're one like a lot of us that find the behavior of narcissists, borderlines, of psychopaths, sociopaths fascinating. It's one to watch. It really is. The judge told the courtroom up front, no outward reactions. And of course, within minutes, Corey Richens is making faces of disgust, rolling her eyes, mouthing, what? And whispering to her lawyers while Eric's family spoke of the destruction that she rained down upon their family and her own children. And she kept doing it. Well, three therapists read letters from her own children, kids who called her Corey, not mom, and begged the judge to put her away forever. We're going to be going through all of that, the various moments in that trial, the contempt caught on camera, Corey's reactions to Eric's family and her own children. We're also going to be discussing the reactions that she had when her folks were singing her praises to the room, and then also her 40-minute rambling psychopathic speech where she threatens to come back and stalk her children who just begged her to never get out of prison. Joining us to do all this, one of our favorite people to talk about crazy people with, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is here along with Robin Dreek, as always, retired FBI special agent and chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Siobhan, let's start with our first area here, the contempt on camera, not only for Eric's family, but seemingly her own children's statements. The judge specifically saying, tone the reactions down, no reaction, and Corey immediately. It's almost like she took that as her cue.
Oh, what? You're speaking to me, Miss Narcissist? I got something to show you. Mm-hmm. And began mouthing, what? While Eric's sisters were speaking. I mean, is this someone who just can't help it or someone who doesn't think the rules really apply to her?
I think it's both. I think it's both. I saw when I was watching, and I had to watch it in segments. I didn't watch the whole thing at once, but I think I caught all of it in bits. But I just saw a convergence of entitlement, immaturity, and distorted thinking. And she's got a story. She's sticking to it. And in her mind, how dare people say anything negative about her? And she has poor impulse control and just can't contain herself.
You know, Siobhan, one of the terms she kept using throughout her monologue was that term love. And it really struck me because she kept using it. And I think, you know, and I know you're going to get into this with psychopathy and their lack of ability in a lot of different areas when it comes to emotions. But I was really curious about how you think she defines what love is. And I'm curious because I'm going to throw a conjecture on top because of what Tony just said about the stalking of her children. Mm-hmm. I wonder, do you think she equates stalking equals love, or is it some other definition you think she has for it? Or is it just a term she throws out there because she knows that people want to hear that?
Love to a psychopathic or narcissistic person is really a different experience than something the way that, you know, the rest of us
experience. A kind way to say that, yeah.
It's different. And it implies, I think, often more ownership. You belong to me. You are mine, which is why when we talk so much about the domestic violence situations or the familicide where the perpetrator murders their family. And it's like they see you as objects, and they'll use the word love, but it's a very different kind of experience. I don't, honestly, I say this a lot and people think I'm weird. I don't really like the word love because it's too nonspecific.
Yeah,
and you'll see really pathological people talking about how much they love other people. And they're people that they may end up killing, you know? So what is love? Is it possessiveness? Is it, I love chocolate, I love my dog, I love my mother? And they're all very different kinds of human emotions. So yeah, she can use the word love, but it's something different than the way most of us.
That makes a lot of sense too, from even what Tony said and what we saw. It would be interesting for everyone watching, I'm going to do it too, is just play that back, her tape of her doing her monologue, if you can stomach it, and replace in your mind, as she's saying, love, control. I really think that's really accurate. Really, she, when she feels she has control, that must be love.
Mm-hmm. We as humans, I think that's a great point, Siobhan, about the word love. I get why you don't like it. I'm going to join you in that camp. Love is a very specific emotion, and we have a very, I think, specific definition of it individually. Each one of us does.
Context.
Based on our own experiences. So when I say it and what I mean by it is going to be different than what you say or Robin or anybody, because it's all based on those contexts. And if we're when we develop these contexts and these definitions to these words, you know, it's all various different situations and scenarios that we're pulling that from. And it would be interesting if people expressed love, quote unquote, more so in a descriptive sense in what they're actually meaning.
I love that.
Which would be disturbing and triggering. But then sometimes the normalcy of what we also define as love is really kind of twisted too, and inadvertently, because society will tell us, well, love is this. And then we have all these songs and all these ways of saying things. And well, it must mean this. I'm thinking when you said you belong to me, of course, the thing that comes through my heart, my heart and my mind is Michael McDonald or Carly Simon. You belong to me. So, I mean, and that'd be a little weird if you're walking around going, you belong to me. Tell her. A little karaoke for the morning.
But I think that's what happens, though, too, because we do have definitions of love, I think, in societies for each of these types of relationships. You know, so I think what happens is, and Siobhan, this is where I'm curious about your opinion on it, is so we have love that we expect to see between a mother and a child. That's one type of love that we have defined in our own minds from a generalization. Same thing between a husband and a wife, or mm-hmm. couples will say, you know, and between us and dogs and our pets. And so we have these generalizations. And then when someone breaks that pattern, like a Corey does, that's when it really grabs our attention. Mm-hmm. So I think we can have that universal, but in these different types. Yes,
right.
No?
Right. Yeah, very, very different types. I mean, and I still, of course, tell my kids I love them and tell my mm-hmm. husband I love him and all of that.
I don't want to be the anti-love show here.
I know.
It's really
sometimes, I think it's just understanding that it means very different things depending on context. And different people, you know, people will often say, can psychopaths have attachments? Well, no, they say, can they love? And I say, they have attachments.
Yeah.
You know, they can have bonds, but it's more based upon you belong to me or mm-hmm. I own you. And that's a very different kind of love than what most of us think of unconditional self-sacrifice for our kids. I mean, you know,
and that's why that behavior, when they see someone else doing like behavior of real love where they're placing the other above themselves, it totally blows their mind. They can't even equate. It's like someone living in two dimensions, all of a sudden they've been exposed to three. They can't even comprehend it because it's not even in their wheelhouse upstairs what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of that. I mean, and it lands a lot differently. Like if you're looking your partner in the eye and you're saying, I love you versus you belong to me, yeah. you know, like mm-hmm. that's very different. And I think a lot of people will be like, what? Mm-hmm. Like I belong to you. Like, yeah, like in a sense, like, yeah, okay, you're my partner, but you belong to me. And that's mm-hmm. what somebody means. That's different. But for some, they don't think anything of it. They don't realize that that's offer mm-hmm. different because that's also how it's been defined for them by others. Mm-hmm. So they end up mimicking what they already know. Amy Richens, I thought this was interesting and heartbreaking at the same time. She told the court that she miscarried twins from the stress of everything after Eric's death. Katie said Eric stayed in the marriage because he was afraid to leave his kids alone with Corey. I get it. I've been there. I've done that. And Corey's expression did not change through all of that, including somebody miscarrying twins. There's like literally, I mean, even if you don't think you're the catalyst for this stress and this chaos, you hear that and like, oh my God, that's horrible. I mean, how does someone sit through that and show nothing but irritation, not even just coldness, but like you're inconveniencing me by telling me that you miscarried twins because I murdered your brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, you know, what we see in this case. And so often it's just that disconnection, mm-hmm. that lack of empathy, unless it's performative. And obviously, Corey has no need at this point to try to put on the facade for caring about Eric's family or anyone in Eric's family. They've moved into the enemy camp for her. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't surprise me that you would see this very cold, callous response.
And it really goes to, you know, our point of what we're talking about how she's defining love. It blows her mind. How could anyone have a miscarriage from stress? What do you mean stress? You didn't have you didn't purchase your object yet. You don't possess mm-hmm. it yet, so what's the big deal? I mean, so mm-hmm. everything we've been saying so far, you can really see it manifest. I mean, she is a beautiful, perfect example of crazy nutter psychopath.
Mm-hmm. The other part of the victim impact statements were the kids, and they didn't read them themselves, but it was read by, I believe it was their social workers or therapists that were there to read. And each one read for a different child. And what was said in front of that courtroom, I was kind of stunned by. I was amazed that these kids were articulating things the way that they were. One of them saying that hearing her name makes him feel hateful and ashamed. And it went on and on. They were calling her Corey, saying that they hope that she never gets out, that they never have to see her. Before I go into all those details, what was your reaction to the children's response that we heard in that courtroom? What stood out to you? What did that read like?
You know, I'll be completely honest here. I don't cry easily at this point in my life just because I've, you know, heard so much and I can kind of compartmentalize it. But I was brought to tears listening to those statements from the kids. Just absolutely hit me in the gut, heartbreaking. I'm sure very hard for the therapist to read them, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is something I took very seriously. And they are, by calling her Corey, they have broken the attachment.
Yeah.
And I think that's, for me, one of the things that was so terribly sad is that these kids have been through so much trauma that this is what's had to be their way of coping here, is that they have just broken the attachment with their mother. And really dramatic.
I was so happy. You know, I was relieved, actually, after that, you know, the sadness and the bone crushing of it and watching her reaction, her non-reaction to her kids basically disowning her in front of the world. I was so relieved that they were on their path. Like you're like, all right, they're aware enough. Because we've seen this in other cases where the kids are still so attached to their parents because they've been indoctrinated into the cult of mom. And these haven't been. They've broken, so they're on their path to healing. So I was at least relieved at that.
Mm-hmm. I was a bit surprised because I was really wondering for a while, what are these kids believing or feeling about mom? In so many cases, when there's not murder involved, and even when there is sometimes, it's very much you see the kids are still, you know, somewhat sticking with mom or dad, depending on what's going on. Obviously, these kids have had some people around to help them work through some of this. And it, and in the working through, it wasn't any semblance of, well, let's focus on your relationship with your mom and not the monster that she is over here. Clearly, the monster that she is over here made it into that conversation and they were able to work through it. How do you think that is? What was that the right move for whoever was working with them to accept reality on reality's terms, help these kids see that reality and help them make sense of their own angles on this, their own experiences of what they had, because I'm sure it sounds like they came into this very confused with a lot of different accounts of who mom was and what mom had been doing to them. And I was very happy to see that it wasn't brushed aside or like, well, yes, this happened, but your mom is still good or this. Like, clearly, she was portrayed as the devil as well, or at least they portrayed her as the devil, and the therapist leaned into that. How do you think that went? I was just very surprised by how raw they were against mom.
Yeah. Usually, and you're exactly right, in many cases, you see more ambivalence with the kids. But they've had some time to sit with this and process it and make sense of it. And I thought it was a good thing. Each of the mental health clinicians that spoke made it a point that they were certified play therapists. So they know how to work with kids. And I think the kids have probably had a lot of help, a lot of support. And, you know, this is where they're at right now. This is where they've worked it through. And will this shift for them as they get older? Will they start to see her in different ways with different nuances? You know, could very well be. But yeah, it's going to be a lifelong journey. And it's just really, really sad that they've got this burden.
You know, I'm really wondering, Siobhan, you know, just kind of, we were talking about the kids and focusing on those statements, and they obviously have totally accepted Corey and what she did to their father and how she murdered him. I wonder if they thought that before the trial started. Do you think they, I know it's hard to tell, you know, it's putting yourself in their shoes, but because of the weight of the statements and how definitively they stated what they thought of her was, do you think they thought she was guilty before the trial started, or they entertained it? I mean, I know it's pure conjecture. I'm just really curious about their state of mind.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I think living with Eric's family, I think that probably, I mean, kids hear what people talk about, and I'm sure that they were exposed to a lot of information even before the trial, and we don't know if they have watched any of the trial or have any awareness of it at all. So it's really hard to say how soon did reality start to sink into them. And it may have been gradually over time, would be my guess.
One of them, and I was surprised by this, alluded to that he thought he might have been drugged the night Eric died, because he woke up shaking and couldn't speak. And then you also have the boyfriend, who also thinks he might have been inadvertently drugged or purposely. We don't know. There's also another person in this case that I off the record I know about too, that thinks they may have been inadvertently drugged by Corey. And again, not that Corey was out there trying to pour, but because just touching some of this stuff and then handling whatever she's handling, that some of these people may have been, you know, passive aggressively poisoned, if you will.
And on that, Tony, but you know, just one thing to put on that, what you're saying though, given how stupid she is and how she might have inadvertently, I really wonder about the inadvertness of it, because if she was that lazy, couldn't she have killed herself?
Well, that's what I'm wondering too. Yeah. If she's passing this around, or what was she doing? But going back to the idea that one of those kids is wrestling in their mind that, well, Dad died by this, and I might have come close to that because I was feeling sick too, but he lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a lot for a kid to take on. I am curious, how many of these thoughts do you think the kids came to completion with themselves on their own fruition of connecting dots, and how many of these dots were connected by the therapist or by family members? And how does that matter? Because when you're a kid, obviously, you're going to get a lot of things fed to you. My right. one concern on this when I heard the statements was, God, these kids have come to a lot of conclusions that yes. seem a bit more mature than their own age.
I'm right there with you on that. And you put it beautifully, because, as I say, kids listen to conversations. You know, people are always on the phone thinking the kids aren't hearing, but the kids are listening.
Yeah.
We all remember being a kid and listening. What's going on with that? Mm-hmm. And so could they have heard speculation? Would they be influenced by the emotions of very angry, understandably angry, but family members venting a lot around mm-hmm. them? And could that flavor their memory and flavor their perceptions and cause them to come to conclusions that, you know, that very likely they wouldn't have on their own? And that was, I was very aware of that possibility too.
Let me just ask this. If the flavors being... I don't want to say flavors being fed to them, but the flavors around them that they're witnessing are in fact accurate. That these assumptions, these statements that the adults around these kids are taking in and then repeating are in fact true. Is that damaging that they weren't the ones that necessarily would have come to those conclusions on their own because of their age, because of their immaturity, because they're children? Is it more important that they didn't necessarily, you know, hit those marks until they could really fully grasp the veracity of what those things are and what it means, these statements that they're saying about their mom? That I was a little concerned little bit by that.
I'm right there with you on that. That crossed my mind too. And yes, I think we have to be very cautious about how we share these kinds of traumatic horror stories with young children. Mm-hmm. And it's better if it's something that developmentally bits and pieces can come together over time as mm-hmm. they get older and are more equipped psychologically to figure it out and how to hold it internally. I would have urged particularly Eric's family to just be really cautious about what they say in front of the kids and the way mm-hmm. they may, you know, because anger, they're going to be angry and anger is a part of it, but the kids don't need to be exposed to a lot of that, you know. Let them work it out in their own way, in their own time in therapy.
I was concerned by the ongoing fear that they continued to express. She was going to come and take us and not do good things to us, like hurt us. Like, who's telling them this? Like, she's not getting out. Like, why are they having this fear of... Yeah. I mean, that just was like, yeah, I don't know.
I am on the same page. Yeah. I am on the same page. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Sorry, Robin, go ahead.
No. It continuing the same. I was really... But it's also interesting and curious that... Yeah, they have this viewpoint that they have about Corey, But what I also found interesting is no matter when they got it, whether they had these conclusions about their mother before they were living with the Richens or during the trial or after, mm-hmm. the fact that they totally seemed to embrace this about her mother, only from what it sounded like from those statements, without any pushback, it just reinforces the fact that she had zero of a connection to her kids that would actually stand by her or even try to give some pushback as opposed to how they feel about her dad. Mm-hmm. Again, we're only seeing the end result through the statements, and we don't know how those statements came to be. But the same point, though, if she was deeply rooted in their lives as their mother, as we typically, as societal does with what love between a child and their mother is, she was completely devoid of it. Because I'm doing my empathetic shifting here. It's like, all right, if anything like this happened to me, what would my kids say about my wife? It'd be hard pressed to say they wouldn't stand with her or even fight or even push back, even if they found, kind of like Asa Ellerup, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She can't let go of the fact that he's some god, to Rex Heuermann. But these kids, man, poof, gone.
Well, and sometimes kids are all too ready to be heard and to express what kind of a monster their mother might be when they hear that somebody's actually going to be listening to them. I witnessed that firsthand in my own life. And so I'm not saying kids are not capable of doing that, because they certainly are. You don't see it very often where they're able to articulate themselves to that level at that age about the monstrous behavior of their mother. But it does happen. I'm happy that they're living it on reality's terms, and they don't have some sort of storybook version of mom in their head that she's going to be this lovely human being. But it is concerning, and it would be to anybody, I think, that's the reality that a child of that age is sitting with their mother. Because, I mean, so many adults that have abusive parents, even as adults, don't reach that level of dismissal of their loved one. It's probably a good thing at the end of the day, but it is heartbreaking that at that age they're having to cross that bridge.
I wonder what they thought about the book when it came out.
But they never even knew about the book when it came out, is my guess.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't think that book was ever read in that house, just like it was never written by them together,
Yeah, it's just interesting.
I wonder how much Daddy was even talked about in that house after he was gone, or how much of an inconvenience that was to Corey. Because I could see Corey being like...
Or a secret conversation the kids would have amongst themselves about that they knew they couldn't have in front of Corey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. Poor kids.
A lot of questions we don't know the answers to, but there'll be three interesting books someday that'll be coming out once those kids are able to write it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, I think we're going to hear more of the House of Horrors story. And it is probably far darker than we would ever even imagine.
I think so.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we work our way through the monsterish story that is Corey Richens.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.